Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information. So it's the end of a hiking day. How much energy do you have to then do something minor or small afterward?
You mean like a minor trail?
No, I mean like a minor league baseball game.
Well, yeah. That's what I figured.
Uh-huh. Because you know that this is my jam.
Well, I mean, I have to clarify because there are sometimes like activities in places like seeing a piece of theater or like things like that.
And
those are typically unallowed by you.
Oh.
Because you're the one who cries tired, food, need to lay down. How dare you try and ask me to go to a piece of theater at this time? And I'm like, I'm curious how they would do Cinderella here in West Yellowstone.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I won't get to know because we have to take care of you.
Because I'm the, you know, the stick in the mud always. So.
Always.
Great. Glad to establish that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Or that lovely little production, I'm sure, that happens in Medora that I'll never know. I'll never know about. Because
right, the one where we had to drive 40 minutes to get to the Airbnb and then 40 minutes back in the dark.
But, you know, the arts.
I hate them.
Clearly.
I'm glad it's all out in the open now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I loathe them.
So much loathing.
So much.
No, obviously I can do those activities on my own if I would like.
But you never
and
do because
I
you're codependent.
I'm codependent. Okay, great.
That's why you like Cotopaxi so much, because it sounds just like codependent.
That's it. That's why we're so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Not
it's
a sponsor.
True. Not a sponsor, no. But we love them.
It's true.
No, obviously I could do those things on my own if I wanted to.
You could, but you'll just listen to me sing River the rest of the
trip. Right, and you'll just be like, remember when you left me alone?
Yeah.
Remember when you abandoned me that evening?
Let the record show that I have gotten multiple texts from you that say abandoned, so I don't know who the one with abandonment issues is here.
Oh, really?
No, really.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Really? So I'm clearly the solo party here in this venture with the abandonment issues.
It's true.
Uh-huh. That's right.
I don't cry at night.
Not at all. And it doesn't take one to know one at all in that scenario. Mm-hmm.
So how much energy do you have at the end of a day, a hiking day, to do something small?
Well, I mean, it depends on what we've just done.
Right.
I mean, there is the day. I mean, everybody go listen to that episode because it's wild. It would actually be episode 11 because episode 10 is Angel's Landing. Mm-hmm. We did Angel's Landing in Zion. It was wild and epic.
It was. Pre-permit.
And we almost had to we almost had an accident on that slope.
We don't talk about the time you pooped your pants.
That's right. That's what I mean by accident.
Mm-hmm.
But after that day, or after that hike, we ended up doing...
5 more things.
5 more trails. And they weren't that small.
No.
We did a lot of big trails.
I think that was one of our longest hiking days. It was like something like 17 miles of hiking.
That's one of the longer ones, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that was sort of where it started. Like the idea of like, we did a long epic hike and now we're going to add on and see what happens.
Yeah.
So we're always kind of thinking about that, I think.
I think so, yeah.
You know, like,
we always have like a Mike Ryan master plan that's stupidly ridiculous.
That is unrealistic.
Unachievable.
Absolutely not realistic. Like, I do remember the day you were like, I planned for us to do 37 miles this day. And I was like, in what world, girl?
Well, this is something we've also discovered about each other. I'm one that likes to load up the planning of the day and take things away. As like, you tend to be more oh, I can plan and add things on. And
yeah, and, or I can realistically plan it out and know, like, because you're going, okay, we're going to do this 14 mile hike. Then we could do this optional 6, this optional 8, this optional 4, this optional 7, and then this optional 2 mile hike.
Right.
And I'm like, we're going to do the 14 mile hike and then we might do the 2 mile hike. Maybe, maybe. And like, so now I just am in a place where I'm like, I know that your plan is not meant to be realism. Your plan is meant to be like
fantasy,
complete and total fantasy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And once I'm on board with that, mm-hmm. or once I got on board with that, it was things went a lot smoother. Mm-hmm.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national parks.
Father, you'll follow you there.
At the national parks.
At the national
parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while hiking and visiting the land, also known as Big Bend National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Humanos, Cohuquitan, Mescalero Apache, Lyons Apache, and Chisos people.
Okay, so this episode is called Small Trails.
It is.
Here in Big Bend
Tiny
National
Gal,
Park.
Or Tiny Gals.
Right, Tiny Gals on the town, mm-hmm, these small trails. But there were quite a few of them, and we loved them, and we felt like we wanted to make a whole episode about them.
They actually take place in 2 days, so they were sort of these tag-ons that we were able to do at the end of our kind of very epic days that we had in Big Bend. We also had another small trail that'll be part of our last episode that really just fits in because it's essentially exactly what we did on that day, and that'll be on Santa Elena Canyon. But the first two trails, the Dugout Wells and the Boquillos Canyon, took place after our first day of hiking,
which included doing the Lost Mine Trail followed by the Window Trail.
Yep.
Then we went into these two mm-hmm. trails.
And the Fossil Bone Exhibit, which isn't a trail but more of an experience, happened after our second day, which was after our very, very long epic hike on the South Rim Trail.
That's right. Mm-hmm. There were a ton of small trails throughout the park. A lot of them could be done within a half an hour to an hour. So we added them as we had the time and the energy.
Exactly. Something we've, you know, obviously established. None of us have abandonment issues.
None.
None.
Zero.
I thought I was abandoned many times as a small child in a food store. So,
And there we go.
And there it is.
And here it is, everybody. As we and
I was like, I'll
now
just
how
live on my own.
So let's talk about why you go to the grocery store religiously once a week on Thursday evenings, and how does that connect to your abandonment in a grocery store?
Well, since
did
then,
you need to establish consistency with the grocery store?
Since we're on our casual recording times, and I'm sitting on a couch, I might as well lay down and just let it all out. Apparently, I do that. That's a COVID leftover thing. It's a 2 week shop, guys. I kept it. So I love it. Other small trails that we wanted to do, but we didn't get to do because we didn't have 4-wheel drive when we were in Big Bend was...
Mistake.
Yeah.
We should have done that.
Included Balanced Rock, which is Grapevine Hills, and also Hot Springs. These were very highly recommended trails, especially Balanced Rock. But it's definitely not ideal to try to make this trail happen unless you're working with a vehicle that could go off-road. Sidebar, after our long hike on the South Rim Trail, when we were sitting outside of the visitor center, we got to be chatty with a few people. One person who was in from New Jersey and another person who was in from Philadelphia. And he had said that, oh yeah, we rented a car. He was there with a few friends. crack the windshield first day. And we were like, oh, okay, great. Good for you. So definitely work with those four-wheel drive vehicles, but also expect the fact that stuff like this can happen. So insurance.
So balance rock is definitely something to do and something that people continued to recommend. If when we would talk to other hikers, they had done balance rock, they would recommend it. When we talked to rangers, they would recommend it. So everybody, apparently balance rock is something to really do. And something we'll do next time when we have four-wheel drive. It was about a 7-mile round trip hike.
Well, that would have been if we'd parked on the road. Because we had asked Ranger Christy, and she did not recommend that because it would have been exposed and very dusty.
So there are, in fact, over 150 miles or so of trails in Big Bend National Park. We did about 30 miles in about 3 days. And most of it was on our first 2 days. So after hiking the Window Trail on our first day, we were at the Chisos Basin Visitor Center and we said, okay, let's add on another hike here. So let's drive toward Rio Grande Village.
So on this first day, our trail itinerary included Dugout Wells, Boquillos Canyon, and the Rio Grande Nature Trail. This is what we had hoped to achieve after hiking through the Lost Mine and the Window Trail.
Now, this is a desert park, and we were curious if we would see snakes. And on this drive over, we did. Mm-hmm. We did not just see one. We saw two snakes.
Coiled around each other.
That's right. And you asked a question very poignantly.
Are those two snakes making love?
Mm-hmm. But it was more like, are those two snakes making love?
Right.
Very disgusted. Accusatory.
And accusatory.
Shame.
Mm-hmm. And then we said snaking love, because... That feels appropriate.
Snaking love, right.
Mm-hmm. So based on our map, we weren't exactly sure where Dugout Wells was, but we knew that it wasn't that far past the visitor center. It's not that we weren't sure, it's just that there wasn't really any sort of road sign indicator as we were driving.
We did, on our drive there, see something that kind of looked like it, and then we were like, oh, nope, that was it. So we had to turn around and go back. The turnoff was a dirt road. It was somewhat bumpy. There are plenty of bumpy dirt roads here in Big Bend. There was definitely that moment of anxiety with the car because it's a rental and we're like, oh, didn't get the four-wheel drive. Should we have done that just to do this? But it was fine because like we were able to get to the parking area pretty easily, and it was and we just went very slow.
It was a very, very slow drive. So eventually as we're driving, we get to a one-way circle and turn right and park right near the restroom. There's also a picnic area that's at Dugout Wells that you could park at as well. It's not a particularly large area to park, but we also weren't in a space or time where it was very crowded in Big Bend, so it was pretty easy for us to find parking.
So technically, Dugout Wells is the area of the park, but the trail is called the Chihuahua Desert Nature Trail, and it was one of our favorite nature trails.
Absolutely.
We absolutely loved it, especially during this time of the year that we were there, because all of the cacti were in bloom.
We were there during the big bloom, and it was pretty spectacular. This half mile loop, because that's all it is absolutely worth it, because while it is an interpretive trail, you also get incredible, beautiful surrounding scenery and an incredible variety of desert plant life. And if you're lucky enough to go at the same time that we were there in the spring when this is happening, maybe you're also catching the big bloom because, whew, stupendous.
Also, things you're getting here is like beautiful big sky view. There's flatland around for just miles and miles, and the Chisos Mountains are in the distance. You can also see javelina tracks here, which is a very special animal that is found in Big Bend. I really wanted to see javelina.
We did not.
We didn't see javelina.
Mm-mm. To set yourself up for this, most of this is a cactus garden, a Lachola cactus garden, but you also pass through a desert oasis that has deciduous trees, bamboo, and palms. So this was a really strange surprise considering we are in this desert park. That was not something I expected to see, but it was very, very cool.
And immediately it was just like, there's so much cacti.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very easy to like, I remember our eyes would sort of just like seeing all of the cacti, taking all of it in as like one thing. But then like if you sit there for a second and you let your eyes adjust, you're like, oh, all of these cacti are so different.
Yeah.
Okay, there's this one and then there's this mm-hmm. one and then there's this one that looks like that. And then there's three of those over there and there's two of them here. Yeah. And like it was really, really cool.
Yeah. So some things that we saw on the trail. So this is a great interpretive signage in the park. All these interpretive signs are via the NPS, but I think it's worth it to talk about them and also kind of talk about the experience while we were there. So the first sign we ran across was desert plants are adaptive to aridity through small leaves or none at all, waxy coatings, rounded shapes, shallow roots, thick saps, spines, and thorns for shade and protection, end quote. This is absolutely something that was very apparent from just walking through this desert loop. The variety, the sheer variety of cacti, and really just seeing the very different shapes. Not only that, but there are very clear differences with the spines on the cactus, plus their leaves, if there are any leaves. So this was a nice sort of introduction to what we were going to be experiencing on this half mile loop.
Most desert animals sleep during the day and or are in the shade. It did say on one of the signs that, quote, nighttime is the right time for most desert animals, end quote.
Which makes a lot of sense considering the heat of the day, that most things would probably be avoidant of that high desert heat and probably be out during the nighttime when the temperatures are cooler and more stable. Animals are able to kind of thrive and sustain a little bit more. So that doesn't mean we didn't see animals in the daytime. Obviously, we saw the two snakes snaking love on the roadside.
That's right.
But, and also plenty of birds. But I think any sort of like mammal-y animals would be hiding or burrowed at that time. So
there were a number of prickly pear cactuses here, including blind prickly pear, Engelmann prickly pear, and purple prickly pear. One of the interpretive signs about desert decay said the following, quote, in the desert, you will find both healthy and unhealthy plants. Fungi and bacteria, which break down dead plant and animal tissue, are less abundant in the desert and decay takes longer. Under your feet, desert termites are hard at work breaking down decaying plants, while overhead, vultures and ravens are on patrol, filling their roles as sanitation crew, end quote.
Which I know you hated to hear.
Oh, I know, right? Their work, I have to say, I mean, there are vultures everywhere, right? Vultures are pretty much all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Roberta Prey. Yeah,
Roberta Prey, mm-hmm. right? If one is close to the ground, that means like literally something's dead and they are like circling to try and like get it, right? Because vultures eat things that are already dead.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of vultures in Big Bend and we even saw some of them roosting. And it was great.
I do think it's interesting when we think about decay in a desert atmosphere because it isn't something that you're seeing in other spaces. You know, a lot of the times you think about moisture having a big impact on decay. So in a desert where that's less abundant, this is obviously something that is going to take a lot longer. I also think about desert microbes and how, you know, it's so important to stay on designated trails because microbial growth in the desert takes an incredible long period of time to happen. And that's something that we learned in Arches, you know, on our first trip and our first trip ever together. So yeah, this is something that just is, when you think about a desert atmosphere or environment or a park, it's very different, especially if you're not used to that environment and you're used to more forest land or beaches. It's just a very, very different space to kind of experience. When we think about other things that we saw within this part of the trail, talking about cacti, two things come to mind. So one of the interpretive signs said the following, quote, spines are a prickly pear's main defense against being eaten, but they don't always work. Rodents bite between the spines while javelina simply ignore the sharp points. These animals also help new cactus plants begin growing by knocking off pads, which may soon take root. And a lot of the times those are taking root in the shade of another plant. So there's a little bit more of sort of like this nursery plant
environment happening within the park, which is, again, nursery. When we think about nursery trees, that's something I think we learned about in Sequoia and Kings Canyon, the idea of these older trees that may have fallen, where trees may take root in the decay of that tree. Here, it's more of these plants are being sheltered by larger plants that help them to kind of come into their own wonder.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting was all of the plants that are not cacti that grow alongside cacti that kind of look like they're cacti but aren't cacti. In the same way that, you know, there were reptiles that lived at the time of dinosaurs that aren't considered dinosaurs, right? One of these was candlewood plants. And something that is distinctive about candlewood plants, and they are so cool.
Yeah.
And they were everywhere.
Yeah.
Is that candlewoods have leaves, but only when water is present in the soil. Otherwise, they drop and they look dead, but they are still alive. And they do kind of look like a very strange cactus that's like got really skinny arms that's stretching into
the air. Very spindly. Like they just kind of are these very rigid sort of pole cactuses, but they're not cacti. They're candlewood plants. And we saw these everywhere, not just in this section, but this was the first time that we were directed of the difference, which was great to, you know, understand that.
There are also five different types of yuccas in the Chihuahuan Desert. That was cool to find out. And then there were also these plants called shindagger plants. Those have like a tall flower stalk.
That after about 10 to 20 years of life, the shindagger will send the stalk up. It will bloom, and then the plant will basically die after.
But it's called a shindagger because all of the stuff around the base is like right at shin level, and it will stick and if you run into it.
Right. And this was very similar, I feel like, to silver swords on Haleakala, because they would also, they lasted, I think they were like century plants, though. I think silver swords are about 100 years, and then they will also flower at the end of their life and die. Which is a great way to just pass on to the new generation and hope that there are more silver swords and shindaggers. And we definitely saw a bunch of shindaggers on the window trail. And it was really interesting to see because the flower stalks are very tall. And a lot of them we saw were already dead. So everything was kind of like brown, kind of very aged looking. So we had seen full life cycle there.
I am fascinated by like what you just said or what you just brought up when it comes to like end of a life cycle, how like these plants that you're just talking about go through like this epic, kind of gorgeous, beautiful transformation and then die.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that for myself. Right? In some beautiful way, like there can be like a big, beautiful transformation and then the end.
Mm-hmm. You know, some other things that we learned while on this trail included that flash flooding happens and can happen, you know, depending on the rain situation within the park, because the soil is so arid, it's not going to retain or gain moisture very quickly. So flash floods can be incredibly dangerous in a desert park. We also learned that thorny plants were a haven for birds and other small mammals to help keep predators at bay. We also learned that this park has the most variety of cactuses of any park in the park system, which in this space seems absolutely true. And I don't doubt that at all. The cool thing about the Chihuahuan Desert Nature Trail is that after you walk through mostly a desert loop with tons of cactuses, candlewood plants, shindaggers, seeing all these interpretive signs, you do end up in this very strange but beautiful oasis area where there are these deciduous trees. There are
clearly water in the ground.
Like grasses.
The green is different.
It's very, very strange considering. While, yes, when we were in the mountains of the South Rim Trail, we were seeing more trees and things like that. But this feels like it's very sustainable here. And the tree growth and the other plant life growth is a clear indication that water is constantly here in this very small space. So it's very clear that this section of the park was very important for people who either were indigenous to the park space or who moved through the park space. This is such a small, easy, and very doable trail that it's would be hard to say pass it up, especially because you really are seeing so much and getting to experience the desert in a way that you might not get a chance to see on such a small exposed trail.
And in total, that took us only about 15 minutes to walk the whole loop.
Right.
Really doable, really easy, totally flat. We did it in sneakers and we learned so much. And with that, let's take our first break. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
All right, we're playing adjective, noun, verb.
We do love adjective, noun, verb. This is an alliterative game.
Mm-hmm. So, would you like to go first?
Sure.
We've got two each.
So, you're trying to guess a phrase?
Well,
There's three words in the phrase that do make a sentence because they have... I mean, you only need a noun and a verb per sentence, but we're throwing in an adjective too. Why not? And they are alliterative.
Mm-hmm.
You got to guess it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Envious, large ogres vibrating.
Is it greedy goblins gyrating?
It's not greedy goblins gyrating, though I like greedy goblins gyrating. No, it's jealous giants gyrating.
Okay. Gyrating is a J. I thought it was a G.
It is a G, but it's just the J sound.
I know, but it's got to be alliterative. Jealous isn't a J
jealous
word.
Girl, it's about the sound. It's not about the... Right, in the same way that like...
You did say it was an alliterative game, though, at the start of this.
Alliterative is in reference to sound.
Oh, well, I always referenced it as the starting letter.
No, it's in sound.
Well, I learned something today.
Jealous giants gyrating is alliterative.
Okay, great.
That's how it goes, girl.
Scream at me some more.
I will.
All right.
No, it's not. No.
I always knew alliteration as first letter.
So would same. Grateful gnomes be alliterative? No, it wouldn't be.
Sure it would be.
No, it wouldn't
yes,
be.
Yes, because it's no, the same starring no. letter.
It's not alliterative. Okay. Noble gnomes is alliterative.
All right.
Because, no, I'm sorry. No, it's about sound.
Well, this is news to me. That, get well, ready. Yes. Get ready for mine then.
Well, I'm ready for yours because is it full of silent K's?
Yep. Yep. Hard K sounds.
Knackful kicks. Knifing. That's it.
Somebody woke up angry.
No. I'm just like, no. Alliteration is about sound.
All right. Well,
it's about sound.
This is what I learned today.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
Yours.
Okay. Thankful folks who work with plants making cheese into small pieces.
So it's grateful gardeners grating.
Yes.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Okay, my second one. Sugary sweetened wax shapes that you light on fire with a wick, storing jam that they've created in glass jars.
Well, it's not saccharin, but
no,
it's something candles canning.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if I've added sugar to it and it's hardened a little bit.
Caramelized candles canning.
Okay, I'll take it. I was thinking candied candles. Canning. Candied candles canning.
Okay. All right. Calm and willing to wait, lung doctors walking the floor back and forth.
Patient pulmonologists pacing.
That's correct. Look at you. And that's adjective, noun, verb. So, after we finished with the Chihuahuan Desert Nature Trail, we continued our drive toward Rio Grande Village, and we were making our way towards the Boquillos Canyon Trail.
So we make a turnoff that we think is for the canyon, but it was just for an overlook. And there looked to be some items set up at the top of the overlook, probably for some sort of interpretive programming that was not currently going on. It also looked like a bunch of wares that could have also been ceremonial goods. So we head back out and we head toward the canyon from here and we find the parking lot. It was literally at the end of this one road. We get out and we use Eartha Pit toilet as usual. And it is very, very, very hot this day.
Yeah. I mean, this is time, like we're probably in the mid-afternoon right now. And so the sun has been just kind of scorching everything. And so it was definitely in the higher 80s at this point.
And we and are now.
Because I checked in with my ex-boyfriend, Weather.
That's right.
That's right.
Right. And Weather told you.
And Weather did tell
because
me.
Because Weather never lies. No, it lies all the time.
It does.
That's why we can't trust him.
No.
So this was trail number 4 for the day. It was going to be a 1.4 mile round trip. And we learn quickly that we will have to ascend very quickly. And it's basically like an up and over for the first section. And that then we will be heading back down to the floodplain of the river and eventually ending up in the canyon wall to meet the river.
Right. Even though at this point in the day we are pretty darn beat, we don't think we'll make it back down to this section of the park. So we were just like, we got to utilize our time. We're here. We might as well hike this. And so we geared up. We had, you know, plenty of water with us at this point. We did see a sign as we were approaching the trail.
This was a great sign.
Mm-hmm, of a woman who looked like she's dying that the signage said, "Are you prepared for this hike?" And I'm glad that that signage is there. I mean, it's humorous only in the fact that it's so over the top, but it needs to be.
We do love over-the-top signage. Mm-hmm. We are here for it.
I mean, my favorite is the illustrated signs of people walking on the thermal areas
at
Yellowstone. Because those are some sort of wonderful. I mean, don't ever do that. And the signs are there for a reason. But there is definitely some really great illustration happening in those signs. So we appreciated this as well.
We did. Starting this hike was immediately... incline elevation. We do see some people coming back. When we get to the top of the section, we do get a very beautiful view of the Rio Grande.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the trail just leads toward the Rio Grande, which we know we're going to get down there. And then when we have to come back, we're going to have to ascend all this again to go back down.
Yes. Descending down and knowing that our trail is along the river, we think that we're going to go to the right when we get down because that's exactly where we're seeing the river at our right. right. However, we actually get to the bottom and have to veer to the left. And it is very lush down here. It sort of gives that feel of the oasis section that we were just in. And it makes a lot of sense because we're in the floodplain area of the river. So this is an area that's more sustainable for life, more sustainable for deciduous trees to kind of hang out. And we've seen this sort of situation in other parks where it's more arid. I'm thinking about Theodore Roosevelt when we were on the North Achenbach Trail, where everything was much greener and more tall plant life down towards the river. So we're kind of on these sandy pathways that lead us through these kind of green hedges and trees.
And eventually we pop out by the river and a field of like smooth river rock. It was right here that we saw a stork land across the water. Loved that.
Living your bird fantasies.
Always.
All through Big Bend.
And then as we continued on, the canyon walls really start to appear as we come out of the trees. We do hear some voices, and then we eventually see that there are other people over by the river.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people. There were a lot of kids in the river, like a mom with her teenage kids, and they were like swimming literally across the river. Because it's not very wide here. It is a very narrow section of the river in this canyon area. As we're walking, there's a lot of round, kind of medium-sized rocks here that make up the, I'm going to air quotes, this trail. And eventually we find our way off of these to some more level ground.
So we walk along this, essentially it's a river path, like a path that is along the river, a canyon is stretching up above, and eventually we see a beach. We hike a little further to get more into the canyon, and we can see that people are swimming and that there are kids swimming. And we start to see the little mouths of the canyon. Bochias means little mouths, so that makes sense.
Right. We do see some other things as we're walking on this trail or this river rock or this river walk. There are pieces of artwork that are for sale that are sort of just left on the river, and it's been left by folks from Mexico that, you know, are asking, you know, if you take something to leave some monetary donation. We also see a boat across the river that's like moored on the shore.
We decide finally, we're like, all right, we've seen everything we can see here. So we decide to turn around and we hike back through the trees. We see some scat on the way out, but realize it was just horses, because then we were able to see the horse prints.
Mm-hmm.
And we trudge all the way back up, and it wasn't even so bad, even though we were tired and it was hot. Wasn't so bad on the way back up.
And we headed back down towards the parking lot, de-geared, and got in the car. And at this point, we made our way towards Rio Grande Village, which was not far from here at all. We got to the visitor center that's here. It's like a camp store, actually, because this is also a camping section of the park. I think the both of us were like, nope, we're done. We're not going to do the nature trail, even though it's relatively short. It was late in the day. We just vegged. You had gone in to, I think, use the bathroom and came back out with like a multitude of snacks. And you're like, here's some ice cream. Here's some other snacks.
Oh,
and
we just had our Fritos in there.
And they had our good old, you know, flavor twist Fritos. And so we just kind of vegged in the car and then decided that our best course of action, again, this was our first day of hiking, we had done a lot, was to probably just head back and to veg out at the Airbnb, which was our little rustic Airbnb. And that's exactly what we did.
And with that, let's take our second break. Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage
Jesse Spano time.
Jesse Spano time.
Yes, yes. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm so scared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Berkley giving us an absolutely iconic performance. She was giving us full on, like,
addicted to caffeine pills,
drug addict addiction level, like, Oscar worthy realness regarding caffeine pills. Mm-hmm. Because she went, you know what? Here, this is what I'm going to do, everybody. They're writing this for me. Great. That's fine. We're going to do it. I'm going to lean in and make this iconic. Mm-hmm. And what's the thing we all remember her for? That and Showgirls.
Yep. The gays have spoken.
They have. And then not only, here's the thing, right? And as if the gays have not spoken enough for, like, their love of Elizabeth Berkley, that we even put her in the First Wives Club.
We did.
That's right.
Monique, I'm Monique's mother.
And you can play my mother.
Oh, no. And then she goes, Mommy.
Mommy. Right.
Right.
She's 16, Bill.
Mm-hmm. I think it's time we start using the F word.
Felony.
Yep. This quickly became a First Wives Club podcast.
And it for the record, easily, if you don't know, the First Wives Club film was written by the same person that wrote the Steel Magnolias film.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I told you this the last we hung out.
Oh, well.
The last time we watched First Wives Club, which was like, I mean, we've watched it probably 1,100 times mm-hmm. this year, so.
Probably. Every minute on the minute.
Every minute on the minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So who is Jesse Spano time?
Jesse Spano time. Now, I feel like she has a lot. I feel like she's like a Bill Nye the Science Guy inspired drag queen. Like,
she's an astrophysicist.
I think she's making astrophysics, or just physics generally, very palatable.
Oh, okay.
And very sort of fun and like part of her drag.
Is she sort of also invoking the movie Weird Science? I can't remember who.
Totally. Yeah.
Like, I can't remember the plot of that, other than
they invent a woman
who comes to life. Mm-hmm. I think she's a computer program that then like becomes real.
Right.
So yeah, I feel like that feels really good for her.
I like the intersection of drag and learning. Mm. I think it's great.
It is a great intersection.
And to make like physics more accessible is, I think, such a great thing to use drag for. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why not? I mean, drag is inherently going to be fun and exciting no matter what.
Right.
So like, and some people would be like, physics, what? But I'm like, hell yeah, physics. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's got to sing Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper.
She's got all of the Time songs.
Right.
Right. Like,
Hung Up Time.
Yeah. We have that. Mm-hmm. Time After Time, certainly. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to add It Takes a Little Time by the Amy Grant.
The Amy Grant.
In her repertoire. I think her merch is probably like, I don't know. Like, I kind of want it to be a science physics fun pack.
I think so. I feel like something you could get at like a science museum type thing.
Yeah,
but exactly. With a drag lilt to it.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. Mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. exciting.
It's like, oh,
what's
here,
that pendulum swinging thing?
There we go. With the balls that hit each other.
That's mm-hmm. right. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Take that for where, you know, exactly. Take that wherever you want to go with it.
Yeah.
But I think that's Jesse Spano time. Mm-hmm. And I think obviously she iconically does, like, I'm so excited. by the Pointer Sisters.
Yeah.
And it goes into the, Elizabeth Berkley monologue.
Sure.
About, I'm so excited. I'm so scared. Like, she does all of that because she's got to do the Jesse Spano references.
Of course.
And she's got the Jesse Spano looks.
Well, I like that she's also on Saved by the Bell, and I feel like we associate bells, especially in school, with time.
I like
so
that,
So, you know
too.
What I mean? Mm-hmm. I do feel like there's some perhaps guest performances by other drag artists that are doing other Saved by the Bell characters.
Mm-hmm. Like Macy Slater.
Sure. Macy Slater.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And who else?
Instead of Screech, it's Preach.
I like that.
What was Kelly's last name?
Kapowski.
Kapowski. I mean, I feel like that's already like Kapowski. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lisa Turtle.
Lisa Turtle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's L-E-A-S-A. She rents out turtles. That's
you.
It. We're doing it, everybody. We got a show.
She does rent out turtles.
Mm-hmm. We got
we
a
do.
Show.
We do.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Jesse Spano time.
All right, everybody. So, let's talk about the fossil discovery exhibit. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we should have, honestly, this is where we should have put Deliria. Like,
yeah,
that drag queen, because we were fully both, like, we went into that bathroom at the end of the South Rim Trail, got out our makeup, transformed ourselves both into versions of Deliria, and then set off about
truly
the rest
outrageous.
Of the day. Literally. I mean, we were just like in another, see, like, we've already invented Deliria, but Deliria to me absolutely looks like, you know, there's no Dana, only Zool.
Yeah.
Just like run through like a ragged, like, windstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And like is still trying to do trails. That's Deliria. Yeah. And that is who we were.
This
day.
Post South Rim Trail. So this is our second day of hiking the small trail, which is more of a small experience, but it is an interpretive exhibit about fossils and dinosaurs. And it is not to be missed at all.
Because there were dinosaurs in this area.
Right.
And they have all the information about them there and you want to see them.
And it's a very cool space. The space itself was, I think, just as cool as the exhibit. We are totally deliriously exhausted. We sat for an hour after South Rim. This was another case of we either do this now or we probably aren't going to come back to this section of the park because we had other things bookmarked for the third day that we were there. We're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And I just remember leaving the visitor center to walk the not very far distance to the car was an incredibly painful experience.
Oh my God.
I felt like I had ridden a horse for days, saddle sore. Take that for what it's worth.
So saddle sore. Mm-hmm. This was an outdoor exhibit, which was super cool. So it wasn't like we had to wait for, you know, it to open or anything like that, or we're afraid it was going to close. It's an outdoor experience that's fully curated.
Yep.
And, you know, there's, you know, that doesn't mean like it's not shaded. It's like an outdoor interior space.
Yes. Yep. And it's a sustainable building, which was very cool as well. So to get here, you go, basically you drive the park road to the Panther Junction Visitor Center. And then depending on which way you're coming from, we were coming from Chizos Basin. I think we made a left down to this road. And this was a very interesting section of the park. The exhibit itself is very cool and put together in a very wonderful, accessible way. So Big Bend has one of the most diverse fossil records in North America, mostly because so much happened in the geological timescale in this park, including, and you guessed it, the Western Interior Seaway.
One of our favorite interior seaways.
the most favorite. The WIS, as it were.
So if you remember from last season, the Western Interior Seaway covered a large swath of North America and was a shallow sea, only like 1,000 to 2,000 feet deep. Many areas were covered by the Western Interior Sea, specifically in the plains. The plains were covered for a much longer period of time, so their fossil records relate more to the creatures of the sea, the mosasaurs, and less of the terrestrial creatures, which were the dinosaurs.
Dino DNA.
Right. Mm-hmm. This was also like Emily's favorite thing about like scientific history that we talked to in our trail mix called
Driving Curiosity.
Driving Curiosity with Emily Hoff and Megan Keller. And Big Bend had it both ways, terrestrial dinosaurs as well as sea creatures.
Right, because the sea here receded a little faster than it did in other parts of the country. There was a time where both existed, not concurrently, but at different time periods. Parking in the lot, the building itself is pretty much a very dominant feature in the landscape, but it is a cool, very interesting rusted metal structure that from a green environmental standpoint is very green. So there's catchments for water, solar panels, it's open air, slatted walls there, and there are some open doorways and windows. The building is doing itself within the park to not draw upon any additional resources, which I thought was really great. And I think it's a really cool way, especially for a desert park, to have a space like this.
I agree. There is so much to learn regarding the history of fossil discovery in this area called the United States, but also particularly in this area also called Big Bend National Park, as well as the different epochs from which fossils have been discovered. Okay, I loved this exhibit. I love this exhibit because it wasn't overwhelming. I mean, it gave you what you came for, which was dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
You showed up for dinosaurs. It brought the dinosaurs. So what I liked was the sort of like, it gave like life-size replicas of different parts of dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Like it had like a really giant, like open area in the center where you could sit on different benches. And
there was a giant like pterodactyl overhead.
Right.
Like each of the cases, like the rooms were subdivided into sort of the different epochs of time within the park where dinosaurs or mosasaurs or other creatures roamed, you know, other megaflora and megafauna. So it was really interesting. There were these artists recreated, I'm pretty sure they were probably like a computer generated image of the different, you know, creatures that you would see at the different time periods and sort of like a rendering of what it might look like in the park at this time, which when you think about this area of the United States right now, it's like hard to imagine this was once a lush paradise or this was once a sea. Like it's anytime we think about geological time, we really have to use our imagination and use the science that's available to us to better understand what came thousands, if not millions of years before we were here. I think the exhibit does a great job at allowing you to access that part of your imagination while being very informative and really showing you the variety of creatures that once called this space their home.
And there's this big open window sort of like on one side. I mean, the
whole big room
space is very big and open. It's an outdoor space that has brought interior to the outdoors,
right,
essentially. So you can see along the desert landscape like different things, and they have different spots like that they outline and on an interpretive sign about, like, you know, these kind of fossils were found here and you can see the spot, and these kind of fossils were found here and you can see the spot. And they also have like a viewfinder that you could look through if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. After spending some time within each of the spaces, when you walk out of the museum, there is a bit of a hill that you can also walk up, which again, we were very exhausted, but decided you're here, we're going to walk up the hill. It's paved, which was nice, but you're able to get an even better view of sort of the plain that you were seeing behind the museum through that large window, and kind of get a chance to take in more of the landscape here and learn a little bit more about fossil discovery in the park through some other signage as you're making your way up the hill. It's a very special space to be able to experience because it is unique. I think anytime you're able to, in a park, get a little bit more than beyond like the general timescape of like human beings in the park, I'm always fascinated.
Absolutely.
We're beyond human history here. We are in the very distant past. And so this allows visitors and allowed us to really have a very special experience that gave us a little bit more than what we were able to see or what we were able to better understand of things that have happened within the human timescale of things, which I think is always fantastic to have that.
And we highly recommend the fossil exhibit. Don't go to Big Bend and not do it. Totally worth it. All right, so quickly, let's put the Chihuahua Desert Nature Trail on the Karen Stone scale.
I'd say a 2.
I'm going to say a 2 only because, like, watch out for the cacti.
Right, and also, I think for some people that might be a little nervous to drive out there, it'd be difficult.
Maybe.
Also, it's not, like, it's not a paved path, so if you have mobility issues, it may not be the thing for you to be able to do. So,
right.
But I do feel like it is a very flat, mostly very easily accessible path. So a 2 feels right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 4 out of 20 Karen Stones. Mm-hmm. And then the Boquillas Canyon Trail, I'm giving it a 4.
I was going to say a 3.
Okay.
I think it's just that, you know, depending on where you're going, that initial grunt, it's not bad because the rest of it is very flat and you're along the river. It's very, very short. Like, it, I felt shorter in some ways than the nature loop, but it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I did feel like once you got down onto the other side, you were essentially seeing everything that you were going to see.
Exactly.
Okay. So 7 out of 20 Karen Stones.
Yeah.
And I don't think we can even put the fossil exhibit on a Karen Stone scale. It was like a place to visit.
That's right.
So
An experience.
And so let's end this episode like we end all of our episodes with some Jeopardy style trivia. Do you want to start us off today, Mike?
Sure. So since our title was Small Trails, my Jeopardy is called Small, Medium, and Large.
Oh.
So I'm going to be, it's going to be a complete the phrases with one word that is a size-based word.
Okay, great.
So I'm trying to think of like a good example.
Like
for
Long Island Medium.
Well, it would be more like
large
power plant, power tool, like they all share the word pow, you know what I mean? So, but it'll be a size word that is the shared word.
Does
that
make sense? I got it. Like, I got it.
Power strip. So strip, tool, and plant
got
would
it.
Be the words you'd get. You'd have to give me the first word that would connect them all.
Great. But it'll be a size
word. But it'll be a size word. Okay.
Great.
So for 100, summer, field, range.
Mid?
Correct.
Okay.
Midsummer, midfield, and midrange.
Great.
And I think there's 6 of them. For 200, potatoes, scale, and pond.
Small.
Correct.
Small
what potatoes,
is small?
Small scale, small pond. For 300, Tim, tune, and desk.
What is tiny?
Correct. Tiny Tim, tiny tune, tiny desk. For 400, bearer, time, issue.
What is big?
Mm-mm.
Not this one's a little bearer with
big bearer. What is standard? Standard bearer, standard time, standard issue.
I got it.
Okay. For 500, headed, ticket, and dog.
What is big?
Yes, that's correct. Big headed, big ticket, big dog. And lastly, for 600, screen, mouthed, and awake.
What is wide?
Correct. Wide screen, wide mouthed, wide awake. Great job.
Okay, great. Are you ready for mine?
I am.
My category is called I Am the Ending.
Okay.
And it's about plural nouns that end with an I.
Okay.
So,
like radii,
for example,
cacti,
octopuses,
octopi
would be octopi.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a rule here.
Okay.
Sometimes the rule is, yes, this term, this plural noun ends with an I, and that is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's, yes, this term ends with an I, and that is the answer. Also, the ES could also be an answer.
Okay.
However, the reason they're different is because if it is a Latin root word, the Latin I. root word ends in I always.
Sure.
Octopus is not a Latin root word. Therefore, octopuses and octopi is correct.
Oh, I don't like the first one.
Well,
octopuses.
Right. I mean, who does? But here we go for 100.
Great.
This type of organism has its own kingdom in taxonomy and is most often associated with mushrooms.
What is fungi?
And so now, after each answer, I'm going to say, is it Latin or not Latin?
Oh, God.
And you have to say...
Not Latin.
And therefore, what would...
Funguses.
And that is correct.
Okay.
Okay, great. For 200, this term means that multiple people may call an educational institution their alma mater.
What is alumni?
Yes, correct. Is it Latin?
Yes.
Correct. So alumnus would be the singular, and then alumni is the plural. Alumnuses is not the plural,
mm-hmm.
and will never be the plural. The plural.
Ain't ever going to be the plural.
No, mm-hmm. no. Creme brulee can never be Jell-O.
Mm-hmm.
That's my best friend's wedding reference for all of you out there. For 300, this term means you have many books, all of which list not definitions, but synonyms of words.
What is thesauri?
That is correct. Is it Latin?
Yes.
Incorrect. Oh. It is not Latin. Therefore, thesauruses is correct.
Okay.
Also. And for 400, this is a plural term for the measurement of something from a center point, as in a circle.
What is a radii?
That is right. And is it Latin?
Yes.
Incorrect.
Damn it.
It is not Latin. So radiuses is also correct. And finally, for 500, this plural word can refer to anything that awakens something else in any way, often associated with motivation, and would be a part of the scientific parallel of the literary cause and effect.
I don't know.
We were looking for stimuli.
Oh.
So is stimuli Latin or not?
Not.
It is Latin.
Damn it!
And therefore, the only plural form for stimulus is stimuli.
You don't want your stimuluses.
Correct. This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. And that's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariello Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.